Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Tummy pain is something that children complain about sometimes. Constipation, urinary tract infections, food intolerances can often be the cause. However, recurrent abdominal pain is a name given to a condition where children have been getting spells of tummy pain for at least 3 months without any obvious cause being identified. Well, here to tell us more about the condition is Dr. Barry Scanlon, who's a consultant in general paediatrics at Children's Health Ireland, and Dr. Aoife Brinkley, who's principal clinical psychologist, also at Children's Health Ireland, and you're both welcome and thank you very much for being with us today. So first off, Barry, I might start with you. At what point should you take your child to the GP when they're complaining about a persistent tummy ache?
Yeah, so I suppose the first thing, and as a parent, if my child comes to me with tummy pain, I acknowledge that they've told me their tummy is sore and I send them off to play. I suppose when a child has acute tummy pain, there are important causes that we don't miss, such as appendicitis or something like that, that require an urgent review with a doctor, be it your GP or an emergency department. I suppose there's the children who fall into having a pattern of ongoing tummy pain that is either coming or going or is persistent. And with those children, the first port of call would be with your GP, who often will take a detailed history as we do and then will potentially order some preliminary tests.
Mm-hmm. So you need to rule out any cause that needs medical treatment, first of all.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do that, I suppose, by taking a detailed history. I mean, most of what we learn from a parent and a patient is in a history. So a good, thorough history and then an examination. And often these children as well, it's particularly helpful if a GP has done some weights and we can see that the child isn't losing weight, which again is a reassuring thing. And in that context, then they're often referred into our general paediatric clinics from around Dublin to us in Crumlin and to their paediatricians around the country. Mm-hmm. We would see about 10% of our referrals are children with abdominal pain.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big, and the majority of those will have recurrent abdominal pain.
So you already know when the child comes to you that there's no medical, specific medical cause for this.
I suppose we don't know. We would suspect that that there isn't something else going on, and then we would ourselves take a detailed history and potentially either order some other tests. And I suppose when we do those tests, what's really important is there usually is no silver bullet. There is no one test for this. And what is really important is the parents understand that you're doing tests to rule out other things.
Mm-hmm.
So once you have the classical history, once you have a child with a normal examination, and once you have usually some routine tests done either by your GP or by ourselves to rule out something like celiac disease that could mimic something like this, then we proceed, I suppose, to really explain it to parents and explain what's going on, that the tummy pain is very real.
That's what I was just going to say to you. This is not an imaginary pain.
No.
This is not a made-up pain.
No.
This is a real pain.
This
and you
is
can
a
see
real
it
pain.
In the child's face, can't you?
You can. And often they will turn pale with this pain. And the children who get tummy pain like this are typically children who are very high-achieving, who do very well at things, who kind of are very driven children. They're not children who would be trying to get out of things typically.
Mm-hmm.
They're also sensitive kids. They're the empathetic kids. They're a sponge. They soak up all of the things that are going on around them.
And including all of the worries.
All of the worries. And it's the manifestation of those worries as tummy pain is what how we see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose a big part of what we do as pediatricians is to explain this concept to families. I have this conversation multiple times a week with families, and that's why it's so good to be able to talk to a wider audience about it. And when you, I suppose, the first thing to do with any family is to acknowledge that this pain is very real. The level of distress and disruption within a family into a child's life is really significant. And this can spiral, and children can spend months in hospital with this problem. So it's not a significant problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's that there isn't a medical cause for the pain.
Right. Let's bring in Aoife at this point. So when does the clinical psychologist play a role in this story?
I suppose some of that depends a little bit on where you're seeing the doctor, where you're seeing the general paediatrician. So not every child with recurrent tummy pain will get to see a psychologist. And indeed, not every child with recurrent tummy pain needs to see a psychologist. The children that we would see, I work in Connolly, so the children who I see would be generally where the first line of support in terms of seeing the general paediatrician hasn't really led to a resolution of the pain. And there's a need for maybe more, I suppose, a psychological approach can add in an extra layer of support to the family and the child. So it would be where it's lasting a significant amount of time and it's having a really big impact on the child. So in those instances, it would be really helpful to see a psychologist. But I'm also really conscious that waiting times can be very long for families trying to access psychology. It's not always an easy route.
So what is the psychologist's job? What are you trying to do? And are you treating the child or the whole family?
I suppose the approach is really the whole family, because a child sits within a family and the child is not going to be dealing with that pain in the absence of the support they get from the parent. So we work with the whole family. And I suppose there's a few layers to it. The first part is just making sure that the child and the family are really clear that we believe them, that they're having this pain, that this pain is real, and acknowledging how difficult that is for them. I would often start with kind of getting the child and the parent separately to give a measure of, on a scale of 0 to 10, how much of a problem is this for you? And that's beginning to help the family and the child kind of shift the thinking around how severe is the pain to actually how much of an impact is it having? Because those two things aren't necessarily directly related. So you can have a really severe pain, but actually have the skills and the coping strategies and the support to get on with the day-to-day activities.
So that you don't have to miss school and you don't have to miss your extracurricular activities if you can manage your pain around those things.
Yes,
it's better to do that, is it?
Much better. The research is really consistent in showing that the more you can maintain children's routines, after school activities, day-to-day attendance at school, the more you can keep that going in the presence of pain, the better it is for the child long term. Now, that's a huge ask. You know, we know that when we're saying that to parents, we're asking them to almost do the opposite of what their instinct is telling them to do. When you have a child in pain, your instinct as a parent is to provide them with comfort, provide them with support, you know, tuck them into bed, you know, give them as much comfort and kind of time out. But unfortunately, with the pain that goes on for a significant amount of time, that kind of approach is actually quite unhelpful.
And do the parents get very worried and maybe feel very guilty when they're in the situation where they're being told that they need to manage the child's anxieties? I mean, is that difficult, a difficult message to deliver and to hear?
I think as a team, there's a great job done of supporting parents with that. So certainly in my experience, when I see parents, they've been given lots of reassurance from the rest of the medical team. They've been given support. So actually they're coming usually in quite a good place around, we know we can understand what this problem is. We're just struggling with, you know, an aspect of it, or we need a little bit of support to get us over the line in terms of getting things back on track. So of course, it's a hard ask because you're asking parents to do something that is really hard when you're faced with a child who doesn't want to do things because they're experiencing pain. But I think not only are children really resilient, parents are really resilient. And once they understand the rationale for that, I think they generally get on board and do a really good job of supporting children.
Is there a bit of tough love required here? It's like, I know you have a pain, I know it's really sore, but we have to keep going.
I suppose it's more of a matter of fact approach, you know, as in, you know, and you could call that tough love. And actually the love part of that is really important, because before you tell a child how to cope, you need to connect with them. So I suppose one thing that I would say to parents is connection first, acknowledge the pain, and then focus on things like reassuring them, resuming activities, getting back to routines, maybe in introducing things that help the child relax, because all of that helps with the physiology of pain. So I suppose the connection at the start of that is probably the most important part.
It's difficult to do. Like, let's imagine your child is crying and they don't want to go out the door to school or whatever they're doing on that day.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get them to cross that bridge. That's tough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And redirection is often a really good tactic in that situation. And I suppose to think about it from the point of view of, if you focus on the pain, you're pulling the child's attention towards the pain, which actually makes the pain worse. Whereas if you help the child to pull their attention to something else, you're helping them lessen the pain. So there's actually a physiological, you know, basis for what we're asking people to do. So redirection is often a really good trick.
Right. Barry, what is going on here when this pain is happening? Because we know very little about this connection, don't we, between the brain and the gut. Is there an explanation for
it? Well, I think we all know as people, if we're in a stressful situation, you'll get butterflies in your stomach, you'll have all sorts of GI upset if in a stressful situation. We've all been there. So the link between the mind and the gut is very strong. Sometimes it's helpful. Sometimes what you find is that there's a trigger for the pain, like a tummy bug or something, and the pain starts, but the reason for the pain goes away and the pain persists. And we see that with different children who have issues around pain, that the reason for the pain is gone, but the pain persists. I think often with children in this scenario, what you will sometimes see is that they are trying to find coping mechanisms themselves, ways of distracting themselves, things they do to distract themselves, and they find that helps. And I think if you can build on those with children, and then to add on to what Aoife was saying, just in terms of an approach where with a child is more to check in with them. So, at the end of a day or at the end of a school day, how is today compared to last week? And this doesn't change overnight. This takes time to get better. Mm-hmm. I suppose the other thing that we do try to do is offer hope to children. So most children who have this grow out of it over a period of time. I think we've been very lucky to, when we opened CHI at Conley, we had a general pediatric clinic working side by side with psychology from 2019. So we have this extra resource, which is really helpful, working together with these patients. They're between that and the passage of time, often they will get better. And I think that's the other thing that's important, is that we provide some hope to parents.
And what do you recommend for the treatment of the pain? You know, when the pallor goes, the pain is really bad. What do parents do?
So I suppose as parents, we all reach for, it's nice to do something and it's hard not to do anything. Heat packs and things like that can be helpful. Sometimes simple analgesia will help, but often it isn't found to be hugely helpful to children. So things like paracetamol or Nurofen. But while using them occasionally is okay, you don't want to be using them all the time, particularly if they're not particularly
useful.
What
about gentle massage of the tummy? Does that work? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Now, again, and I come back to Aoife on this, sometimes that is bringing more focus back to the pain, and what you're trying to do is think about more moving away from that and on to trying to distract them or do something else or redirect their.
I feel like we have to tread a fine line here, with this?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the bit that's so hard for parents is you're asking them to connect and acknowledge the pain is real, but not give it too much attention. So, you know, how do you know which side of the line you're on? And you're not going to get it right all of the time. But I suppose, you know, we know that certain things aren't helpful. We know that if a child themselves is worried about the pain or is hearing conversations around what this might be, we know that's not helpful for them.
Well, that's self-fulfilling, isn't it?
It is. And children will hold that worry, and that worry will impact on the gut-brain interaction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we also know that checking in with the child constantly around, did you have the pain today? What was the pain like today? That's also not very helpful, because, you know, the child will start to see the world through the lens of pain. So it's obviously you want to create a space where a child can tell you if they've experienced pain in school. But it can be really helpful to have like a plan in place with the school whereby if they get the pain in school, you know, we'll do A, B and C. We'll have steps in place so that the immediate response is not send the child home.
That's what you don't want to have happen.
Exactly, yes.
Because I have a message from a listener whose daughter has this problem right now, and she occasionally misses school. And this listener says it would be great if schools could be educated about it also.
Yeah.
You agree?
And I think we had the complication post-COVID of schools being understandably really
cautious,
yes, about illness, and parents being really cautious about illness, and children being really cautious about illness. So we're probably come out of that now, but that's certainly impacted for a few years. I think having an open, honest conversation with the teacher around, we've talked to the doctor, we've been reassured that this is nothing harmful or serious. It is hurting the child, but it's not harmful. So the advice we've gotten is that the child remains in school as far as possible, to let the child know that. Mm-hmm. Tell the teacher if you're not feeling well. The teacher's going to support you to maybe take a little bit of time out in the classroom. Most classrooms would have a little quiet corner, or the child might be able to go to a sensory room or somewhere just to get a little bit of time out. Come back to the classroom, see how it is, see if you can last until the next break or lunch or the end of the school day. So almost like pushing out the time that you do the very strong response of ring the parent to bring, mm-hmm. bring the child home.
And in treatment, do you often get to the bottom of what the worry is? Do you manage to figure it out, and is there any commonality there?
There would certainly be patterns. I suppose what's really important to say is not every child who comes with recurrent abdominal pain will be an anxious child or will have a specific, you know, anxiety there kind of impacting on the pain. Many do. And we would see where children have experienced maybe change within the family. That can be as varied as, you know, a grandparent dying to an older sibling moving away to college. So, or a parental separation. So things that, some things on the outside look really stressful, other things that maybe you wouldn't really realise were causing the child anxiety or stress. So it can be things like change. It can be difficulties in school. Sometimes children who are neurodiverse who may be struggling with the school environment. It can be sometimes a physiological stress. So it can be a child who's had maybe some kind of infection that set off.
Like Barry was saying, and then the reason for that goes away, but the pain stays.
Yeah.
And Barry, you said that it's really useful to have this conversation because you have it a lot in practice.
Yes.
I mean, what is the main message that you would like parents and guardians to take away from this?
So I suppose as parents, we all worry about our kids, and that's good and normal. And when we take them to GPs or to paediatricians, it's to bring their worries to us, and it's our jobs to manage their worries, and it's our jobs to take a detailed history, examine the child carefully, and to follow them and to order appropriate tests. I suppose there is no line in the sand for when to stop doing tests with children, and particularly when they have tummy pain, and often doing further tests can be unhelpful. So I think, again, it's you know, part of our role as pediatricians is to build trust with parents. And that's hugely a rewarding part of what we do, but can be challenging. And I think if parents have the concept of this, that this is out there, that it's very common, 10 to 15% of children will get recurrent tummy pain, that they're aware of that. So when they meet us and we have done our other bits to check that everything else is okay, that they have this at the back of their mind.
And so that they trust you on that diagnosis, because the tests can be invasive and cause worry in and of themselves, right?
And you can do a test and it can pick up something that isn't important, and you've a stressed family with, who then you have to go and tell them, we've done a test, which we didn't think there was a huge need for, and now we found something on it that's not particularly relevant, mm-hmm. but it's there.
But we need to tell you
then
about
that's
it anyway.
A worry.
Yeah.
So we, part of our jobs is to hold that for parents and to build that trust with parents.
Well, it's been very useful to talk to you, judging by the messages that are coming in as well. And thank you very much for all of that advice, Aoife and Barry. We will take a break. More after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.